fluffy bread,
classic burger buns,
and so many carbs. Carb fear is real. But Hero Bread makes healthier versions of the carb-heavy favorites we love most. We're talking fewer calories, 0 to 2 grams net carbs, zero sugar, and seriously great taste. Plus, more of the dietary fiber and protein you want with no compromise. Don't skip out on your favorites. Just use Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co with code HEROPOD at checkout.
Karen, I don't think our guest today needs much of an introduction.
I think you're right.
All I have to say is time travel.
Has he been here before?
We're going to find out because I'm obviously super intrigued about the topic of time travel. But if that wasn't enough, right? Mm-hmm. He also is going to talk to us about using telepathy.
Ooh, I like that.
Uh-huh. And how a magical tree guided him in his business. And how he uses dream time to improve his life.
I don't even know what dream time is. Is that the time when you're dreaming?
We're going to find out. And if that wasn't enough, he actually experimented with more than 50 different energetic healing techniques. And he's here today to talk to us about all of that.
Wow.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Well, strap in your seatbelts because this one is going to be a wild one. My name is Will.
And I'm Karen.
And unlike Mulder and Scully,
we both want to believe.
So we've embarked on a journey of discovery.
We've talked to people deeply entrenched in the spiritual and metaphysical world.
We've thrown ourselves into weird and wonderful experiences. I even joined a coven of witches.
And wait, you joined a coven?
Yep, all in the interest of finding something.
Anything.
That will prove that there's something beyond this physical,
three-dimensional world we all live in.
This is the Skeptic Metaphysicians. Welcome to the Skeptic Metaphysicians. I am excited today, as always, but especially today. Our guest has a background as a microbiologist. He was a pro cyclist and organized adventure retreats in the past, but now he's a time traveler and a quantum business coach and a four-time best-selling author and host of the podcast, The Derek Loudermilk Show. Derek, I don't even have the words to say how excited I am to have you on the show today. Thanks for coming on.
Will, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So have you been here before? Is this our first time together?
It is, as far as I know. And the way that I see time travel is there's actually two different types of time travel. And I'm more experienced in the type which is expanding time and contracting time. Then there's also the type where you can travel backwards or forwards in time, at which, according to physics, and once you go into the higher dimensions, right, time really collapses to a single point. So the reason I started exploring time travel was, so theoretically, it should be possible to experience time travel, but what types of things would lead me to have that experience? How would I actually know how to time travel if I were to try? And so where I started was trying to expand and contract time and also arriving on time. And a lot of entrepreneurs that I work with, they have this feeling of, I don't have enough time. Like, they're always rushed. They're always busy. So I said, how can I always have enough time to get everything done that I need to do? So that's kind of where I started in my own exploration of time travel.
That's a perfect question, too, because nobody ever has enough time. I know I don't.
Time is not on our side, that's for sure. So then you're talking about not actually going back and slapping high fives with Columbus, but rather expanding time so you have more time in your day to get all your tasks accomplished. Is that right?
Yeah. And so I realized that one of the first things that early humans did was establish time and space coordinates. So they would build something like Stonehenge to establish and start mapping things. So they could say, okay, here's the terrain, here's the space we have dominion over, and here's how we're going to keep track of the progression of experiences, which is time. And as soon as you start mapping those things, you can start to control them. And then if you operate outside of looking at your watch, outside of time and outside of maps, and you're just sort of being in the present where you are, those constraints don't apply to you as much. It's almost a belief system which is causing you to operate in time and space.
Interesting. So when I remember when I was a kid and summertime would come along, And it was forever, right? Summer was the longest time of the year, and it was glorious, glorious longest time of the year. And then school days were even longer. Now, as an older gentleman, I won't say my age because I don't want to make anyone jealous, but now summer times go by in a blip. Before you know it, we're bundling up for winter again. So how does our perception as we grow older alter our perception of time?
I would venture to say if you were filling your days with as many new experiences as you were, as when you were a kid, that you might have the same experience of the speed of time. The way that I see it is time is helpful because it helps us track experiences and growth. And so if you're continually exposing yourself to novel things, you probably would get the same feeling as if when you were a kid.
See, it was different for me, though. Getting to summer is what took forever. It was like 2.5 years to get to summer. And then summer was like 2 days, you know, because I was having so much fun. And they do. They always say that time flies when you're having fun.
That's what they say.
So is that true?
Yeah. And potentially, right, because you're not aware you're having fun and you're in the present, right? You're in a flow state often. And so time is irrelevant. It could go by really fast or slowly, and you might not even know. And it's this being present with ourselves in the moment is part of what I've been able to do. And so a lot of people, right, you have a call, you have to make a podcast appointment, you have to be there on time, you have to, whatever it might be. And that's what gives us the feeling of, I think, being on the back foot of having to respond to the demands of the world. So the first experiment I did to try to prove to myself that I could time travel was I went to the gym and I wanted to do a long workout, maybe a 2-3 hour workout. And I only had 1 hour before dinner. And so I said, okay, I want to go to the gym and have as much time as I need for this workout without feeling rushed, without feeling like I had to check my watch. I specifically did not look at any time devices. And I ended up doing my full workout and arriving at home just right on time to wash my hands and sit down to dinner. And so, you know, Will, I think maybe you and I are similar in that we like to explore, experiment to see if it works for us. And that early experiment, you know, the first time you try something and it works, then you think, okay, well, what else can I try? Can I keep progressing with this?
So is it like you have this experience and you're in that experience and you're experiencing that experience for as long as it takes?
That's a lot of experience.
And then time, it kind of adjusts itself accordingly. Like when you're done and you're done with the time.
Yes. I think time can speed up and slow down for individuals without messing up the time stream for the whole collective. The next time I tried this, I wanted to focus on arriving on time or being in the right place at the right time. And so I spent a full day going on an adventure on a bike ride, a date with my wife. We went to a different state. We rode all day and we had to pick up my kid from school. And we didn't look, well, my wife might have, but I didn't look at the time all day. And I was the one in charge of making sure we got there. And it is stressful a little bit. You have to have some amount of faith in the universe that you're not going to, you know, leave your kid and he's going to be there crying all by himself when you get there. But when we arrived, and there was lots of unexpected detours, right? You know, flat tires and wrong turns and all this stuff. We arrived at school pickup precisely on time. Like I was walking up to the school as he was walking out of school. And so there were people that arrived before me and there were people that arrived a little bit after me, but I was the only one who was precisely exactly on time.
I don't know if I could do that. I would have been panicking. Like flat tire, are you kidding me? I'd have had a heart attack. Oh my God, the kid.
Well, Karen, actually there is a practice, I should say, when we were doing these things, when I joined the coven, when I really dove in to try to figure this whole coven thing out, one of the things that they did was called bending time. And the concept was to not look at the clock at all. Like if I was running late for work, I said, I get in the car and I've set an intention that I'm going to drive same speed as ever, no rush, no panic. But when I get there, I see myself arriving right on time. And the key is not to look at the clock at all while you're on the road. And inevitably, when you do that, you would get there on time. How many times have you said to me, how did you get us here on time?
And you could not share this with me for all the time we've had to pick up Sienna from school and I'm panicking in the tunnel traffic.
Well, a guy can't tell all his secret, can he?
How about just one?
So I'm assuming this is kind of a similar concept, Derek, where you're bending time in order to fulfill needs that you have. Has it ever backfired on you, though?
No. Sometimes I've just abandoned it by getting too nervous and checking my watch without thinking and then being like, ugh, you know, and then it sort of dissolves the process. If you'd like, I can speak to the other type of time travel.
But before you do that, so just to clarify, the act of looking at your watch ruins the whole entropy of things, right? Is that what you're saying? That the minute you look at the clock,
that's my sense of it.
Okay. That is similar then to what they're saying, because that was the big thing. You just cannot look at your watch. You cannot look at your clock and you'll get there on time. And it has worked more times than not, to your point.
So you're a time traveler too. It's great.
But I would say I'm a time bender. I'm not sure if I would say I was a traveler. But then let's talk about the other type of time travel, which is really, as a science fiction fan, an absolute obsession of mine.
Yeah. So I think there's two ways to go about it. There's a technological-based way, and then there's a consciousness-based way. And so if you think about going back to, let's say, Roman gladiator times or into the future or flying cars or whatever, there's a space and time component. And the way that I've found the access point for this is when, so you guys are probably familiar with past lives all being part of the same oversoul. What I would do is I would find a past or future version of myself, because that's the closest connection that I have. So I would, let's say I have a version of myself that was alive in Roman times, and I would essentially match my frequency, my vibration, by just tuning in to that version of myself. And then I could begin to view the world through their eyes and have the experience of living in that time as that version of myself. Hmm. And so it's not that I'm actually taking my physical body now and putting it in that space. Is that I'm taking my consciousness and putting it in a situation to experience that time and place.
There was a great TV show on Netflix, and probably still is, called Travelers. It was the same similar concept, but they actually beamed their consciousness into people from the past. It wasn't their own selves. It was someone else. It was someone who was just on the verge of dying. At the point of death, they would take over their bodies or send over their consciousness to take over their bodies, and that's how they traveled. So, but they couldn't go back in the future. Go back to the future. They were stuck in the past at that point.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Sorry, I mentioned sci-fi fan. I apologize. But getting off on a tangent. So that's interesting. So one could say that a past life regression could be potentially a form of time travel, where you're actually going back into your self back in Roman times and experiencing those times while you're under hypnosis.
Yeah. And as far as, you know, we were talking about experiences, you know, it kind of depends on if you feel that you're really there, if you feel how real it is, or if you feel like you're just observing a person like going through this. And I think that it just has to do with how well you can sort of match the feeling state, the frequency state of that person and in time.
So when you've done this, can you actually like touch an object and remember how that feels? Like, are you fully present there, or is it more of an observation?
So the one that I remember the best was actually I went in the future, and actually it was the same incarnation, the same body, which was really interesting to me. Experiencing myself, it was about 110 years in the future, and I looked about the same, and we were all living in a sort of agrarian utopia, high-tech agrarian utopia, and I was essentially able to tour my own neighborhood in the future. And so, you know, there was like the environment, the sights and smells and sounds, I think were probably the things that stuck with me the most from that experience.
Wow. So this is possible to go forward in time as much as it is to go backwards in time. The only thing is that past events, you could kind of corroborate to a certain extent if you find things in the past, in the history books or whatever. But in the future, it's just kind of assuming that it's the case. Now, my one big past life regression, I felt the fire in my face. I felt the heat. So I do feel that I was there for that sense. But I'm absolutely fascinated with the concept of going forward in time, especially knowing now that we're going to be on this great society 100 and something years from now. We still look the same way as we do. That makes me feel much better.
Makes me feel better too. Now, can you control how far forward you go? Like, could you say, I want to go 50 years, or does it have to be 150, or do you have no control over that? You just kind of land where you'd land?
I imagine with practice, you could control it better. In as you alluded to, Will, I do a lot of experimenting, a lot of dabbling, and so I'm still fairly beginner at this. I kind of just get what I'm given.
Hey, I'd take it.
Absolutely. <I'll> take it. that's fascinating.
It really is.
You mentioned the technological way of doing time travel as well, which we don't currently have, obviously. There's no time machine that I'm aware of unless H.G. Wells was onto something.
It's a big box with lots of dials and gears. And
yeah, and I've seen it where it's like the chair you're in. I've also seen it with just like all the you go into this
hot tub
tube. Yeah, the hot tub time machine. Absolutely. There's all kinds of time machines, which we don't have. Makes me sad. But doesn't this, maybe that's the reason why we can't physically travel to the future or the past, because the whole butterfly effect, right? You can change something and change all of reality. And that brings to mind something that Benji Scherer said to us, Karen, a while back, when he was talking about reality transurfing, where all time is happening at the same time, all at once. And it's just a matter of hopping from one film strip, so to speak, to another. Mm-hmm. Is that a similar concept to what you're thinking about? Or do we actually go back to our current timeline? Or, I mean, the question would be, is it a different dimension? Or is it truly our own timeline?
I think things can get messy. And from what I understand about timelines and time streams, there's probabilities for each one as an individual. And so for us as a collective, like the Earth humans timeline, and that many of these would just fail, right? If they lead to some sort of catastrophic event or the non-progression of the evolution of consciousness, they would consider to be a failed timeline. And so we have no awareness of our alternate selves that are experiencing these sort of failed timelines. But I think if you, there's that Marvel series Loki, and they talk about there's the time variance authority, and they're like trying to repair these offshoot timelines. I think it can get pretty messy, and if you have to go back and try to repair timelines, because it's just the computational understanding would need to be sort of nearly infinite. But I understand there is that time variance authority is probably alluding to an actual unit that works with a council, let's say an intergalactic council that keeps certain time streams within a bounds.
Really? So you think that actually there is a council that actually works outside of time that helps to make sure the time stream is intact?
Yeah, I've heard this from people who channel higher dimensional beings, and I've also heard it from people that work in the military. And so from sort of multiple sources, they refer to it generally as the Arcturian Time Council. So it seems to be a species from that star system that have adept dealing with time streams. In particular, we're talking about the Earth human time stream of like where we're going right now as a planet.
You are blowing my mind. I did not expect you to go down that
road. I did not either.
This is amazing. So, and it's just so happens we just talked to someone that does speak with ETs and different beings from different stars and things like that. She never mentioned that, but she did mention that there's several different races out there that do and routinely visit us to help us with our evolution and all this kind of stuff. And we don't have to go too far, though. Sticking with the Marvel universe, in the Avengers, when they're talking about, was it Endgame, I think it was, where if you make a change, the timeline splits off into its own different reality. So it could potentially be that there's an infinite number of us living infinite possibilities in different dimensions all at the same time. And it starts to make my mind all warpy. So I'm just going to stop.
The exponential growth, right?
But what I think is really fascinating here is that some of these blockbuster movies, there are organizations, like I interviewed a guy on my own show who works for this millennia-old organization that is like the spiritual CIA, he calls it. And they will bankroll or fund films and release little drips of information to sort of make the public aware of things that are happening. And so TLS, it's the light system. And of course, we know that they're like on the other side, there are, you know, people using movies for propaganda in other ways as well. So it's like, whenever you're watching a Hollywood production, I often have this undercurrent of like, are there any subtle messages or belief structures that are themes in this movie that one side or another is trying to bring into the sort of awareness of the masses?
Well, that's interesting, because I've always thought that when we see these, you know, movies specifically about, you know, alien invasions, and it's always, you know, they're coming, they're killing us all, and they're very scary movies. And then the woman we spoke with a couple of weeks ago said, no, that's, you know, that's not how it's going to be. We actually have some people that are protecting us. So, but that's interesting, because I'm like, I've always thought, are they preparing us? You know, should we be getting ready for something? Because all the movies are like that, and it freaks me out a little bit.
I get the feeling that Derek is saying, yeah.
I know. This was not the conversation. Let's go back to time. So future. No, past. Let's go to the past. Safer there. How do you know this is real?
Jay, that's my question. What?
Sorry, Will.
Well, I would say that because we're talking about it, it's real. Because now you and I are agreeing that it's something that we can share communication about the experience. Mm-hmm. If it was just me, perhaps there could be some question. Mm-hmm. But if we agree that it's real, then it becomes real.
So I'm not 100% sure I agreed that it was real, first and foremost. we're just having a conversation, right? But
I think it's real.
I would love for it to be real. It's certainly makes life a lot more interesting, a lot more fun. Oh my God, so many questions. And we are just on time travel. We've got a lot of other stuff we got to talk about. If someone wanted to experience time travel for themselves, what's the best way to do that in your estimation?
Yeah, I think putting yourself in a state, in a feeling state of what it would be like for you to, and let's do the time bending side of things. Like if you wanted to always have enough time, if you wanted to always be on time, be in the right place at the right time for all the good things that are happening, there's a certain way that would feel for you to experience that. And so you would want to get very clear on what that is like for you, so that you know it very well, and then practice returning to that place. And I think what generally happens is that you'll tend to experience the world as someone where you finish everything on time. And so it just becomes less of an issue, the deadlines and the pressure and the scheduling and all that stuff, because of the way that you're showing up and the state that you're living in.
So it sounds like there's a little bit of manifestation in there.
I was thinking just that. Mm.
So you manifest arriving on time.
Yeah, you have to know what it feels like to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then if we wanted to talk about the actual travel rather than bending, how did you accomplish it?
Yeah, it's really similar to astral projection technique. There's even, you know, even in some of the hypnosis apps or the brainwave audio apps, you can get someone to walk you into a, like you were talking about your past life regression, just a nice induction technique, a good visualization that it'll get you into a particular brainwave state, which will allow you then to have that experience.
which is a surefire way of having Will not time travel, because I've been trying to astral project forever and never happened. So, okay, I'm happy living in the current. I'm not going
to
be bitter.
You have to let go of the control. Let yourself get into that mind
right,
state.
Right.
Well, I'll send you an audio that you could try.
Really? Oh, that would be amazing. Thank you. Yeah, I'd appreciate cool. that very much.
Yeah.
I've been trying for literally decades. But anyway. Wow. So, Will, I mean, we do have a lot more to talk about in terms of time travel, but I do want to get to the telepathy thing. You use telepathy on your son and your cat. Is it? I just watched the movie Men Who Stare at Goats, right? Mm. Is it like that where you just kind of stare at someone and you force them to do something, or do you communicate with them? How do you define telepathy?
Well, your use of language there, forcing, is the thing that it's going to get in the way, actually. So
there's always a thing that gets in my way.
I'm right there with you. Like, the harder I try, the less it works. And I didn't know that I had telepathy until I met a woman who teaches animal telepathy. She works with Olympic horse jumping athletes and their horses. And she also works with Netflix and does the animals for shows and stuff like that. And she said, "Oh, I can teach you telepathy in just a few minutes." I was like, "Yeah, well, that would be amazing. Like, please do." And it's, again, she has a particular way of getting people into a state where they're open enough to receive information. And she was teaching me live on Instagram how to do this. So I believe it's still on her Instagram account. Her name's Dita Young. She's from Denmark. And so she had me practice. She held up pictures of horses, and these were clients of hers. So she knew their complete medical history. And so she had me diagnose these horses by, you know, what's wrong with this horse? Just showing a picture. And I would say, "Oh, you know, it has a weird impingement in its neck on the left side. And it's not placing its weight enough on the back foot because of a tweak in the hips." And I don't really know how I knew this stuff, but I was right. I was 100% accurate my first try.
100%. Wow.
And so she said, "Yeah, I can verify all this because I have the medical history of the horses right here." And I thought, "Oh my gosh, that's too easy. It's so easy."
Just by doing it, you did it?
Well, so having her there sort of encouraging me, like, okay, now is there anything with his digestion, or how's his digestion? She actually tried to trick me a couple times. She was like, "You know, does this horse like other horses or not?" And I was like, "Yeah, he does." And she's like, "Okay, good, you got it." But so the challenging thing for me was knowing which was my own thoughts and which were the thoughts of the horses, because they both sounded like me. And so I think part of the learning process of telepathy, as I think probably a lot of people will be able to learn it, we should theoretically all be telepathic. I think it will be understanding when someone else has a thought, and it discerning between your thoughts and their thoughts. And I have the same problem. So I try to practice on my cats. One of my cats will come up to me and look at me, and I'll be like, "I should go let the other cat in from the rain." And then I'm like, "Did you just tell me to go let your friend in from the rain?" And this has happened so many times that I realize that's how this cat, one of my cats, communicates with me. But at first I always think that it's my own idea. And then I realize after a minute that it's coming from my pet.
Wow.
Can you put your ideas into your pet? Like, could you say, "Go lay down over there," and it does?
Sometimes. Yeah. I can invite them to come sit with me, or I can tell them, "You know, I refilled your bowl. Like, you know, you can go drink it now," and they'll go, or they'll come and sit on my lap. But it's, again, I think if I'm trying hard, it doesn't work, or maybe they're not paying attention. Maybe they're just too busy and they don't pick up my telepathy.
You know, I knew that my cats were telepathic. I knew it. I knew it, Karen. And I told you about it a long time ago. But now, yes, I did. Maybe I sent you telepathic.
Maybe. Maybe I thought it was just me.
So, I mean, I I have sat, I can't tell you the amount of times that someone, you know, those cards, those flash cards, a star, it's a circle, it's a square, it's a guy sitting on a chair. And my success rate on those is like 1 in 152, right? I guess I just don't trust myself enough. Or is it just that you have to have someone there that has these skill sets that allow you to bring yours out?
Well, the thing that I think probably would be holding you back. So there's at the Science Center where I live in St. Louis, there's this special game where it's like, who can meditate better? Who can put their brain in a more calm state? And you push a little puck across the board. So if you're more calm, it pushes it into their goal. And if they're more calm, it pushes it into your goal. So I played with my wife and she instantly got into this perfectly calm sort of zero awareness meditative state. And it was like, slam the puck into my goal. And I was like, wait. And then I was like, no, let's do it again. Cause I meditate cause I'm good at this. And so then my ego was like, okay, don't think. And boom, she got it right in every time. And so here I am trying to think how I can quickly enter a Zen flow state. And then she just does it. And so I think what happens is, especially in our culture and especially with men, especially with scientists, we really get into thinking and that changes our brainwave states to such a degree that it just excludes the possibility of many of the experiences. So I think looking at brainwave states and training that would be a great place to start.
So then I assume that you're wired up to something that...
You got a little head electrode hat on.
See, now, knowing you, Will, if we were doing that, you would want to switch sides to make sure it just wasn't your thing, right?
That was my next question. Did you switch sides to see if it was rigged?
No, but you can track, like on the screen, it shows the person's brainwave states. And there was one moment when I was calm and it dipped down and I was like, yes, I did it. And then right away, my awareness of doing it ruined the whole thing.
right. Then it seems like telepathy is a lot more prevalent out there than people give credit for. Then you think is everything, does everyone speak telepathically to each other? We just don't know.
Well, so again, this woman, Dita, said that she's been able to train 400 people in telepathy so far. And that she has, in order to certify them, basically to go out and do medical diagnoses, they have to be 100% accurate because otherwise it opens them up to, well, also they're working with veterinary doctors and they want to be able to continue doing it. There's a lot of times it's hard to diagnose exactly what's wrong with a high performance animal. So they bring them in as support, but not all of her students achieve the perfect rate of diagnosis.
I would love to get to 50%. I really would.
Can you tell us about some of the experiences you've had with your son doing this?
Yeah. So when he was really little, he's 5 now, when he was much younger, the first sort of link that I noticed that we had was co-dreaming, actually. And we often share dreams in the morning. If we remember our dreams, we tell them to each other and interpret them around the breakfast table. And he would share dreams that I had, and I would ask him, I would try to quiz him about certain aspects of the dream to see if they were the same. And then I could go and say, here's what I wrote in my dream journal. And you told me we were sitting, the first time it happened, he was like, we were in this neighborhood with big mansions and tall trees, and we were sitting on the curb, sort of waiting for a parade to go by. And then we found something, and I had like a drawing of us. We found a treasure chest with rubies in it in the gutter, in the drain gutter. And I had, you know, the same scene as him, basically. The only difference was the...
What?
Yeah, it was so cool. And I was like, oh my gosh,
so cool.
We're connected.
That is mind-blowing. I mean, there's got to be something where some people are more adept at this than others, right? I don't truly believe it's just that I'm blocked. Some people are actually a lot more open to these types of things than others. Is that right? Or am I just really dense?
Sorry.
You left a little too hard on that one, Karen.
Well, I would say 7 years ago, I was essentially completely living as a materialist scientist and simply just wasn't looking for these types of experiences. And I think every human has access to all of these things. They're just just haven't looked yet or haven't tried or played around with it because they don't believe it's real or they don't believe it would work or they just don't even know it exists, maybe.
And maybe, Will, maybe it has happened because how many times have we been sitting down and I've said, oh, you know, I've said something before you said it or vice versa?
Well, that's you. That's you. You're telepathic. I've said that a long time ago. You know what I'm going to do before I do it. Before I even think about it, you'd know about it. It's the other way. It doesn't go the other way around.
You're just predictable.
That's a fair point, too. You know, when you have these conversations, we've been doing this show for over a year now, and sometimes the conversation kind of drags on a little bit, and it's like, how is it possible that we've only spoken for 10 minutes? I believe that Derek's been bending time because we are already like way past the half minute mark, but this is way too fascinating of a topic not to go long. I hope that's take up too much of your time. But I did tease the other stuff we talked about that we'd be really badly served if we didn't touch on. So we'll hopefully come back to this. But tell me about this magical tree.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. This is close to my heart. And one of the things that sort of started expanding my awareness because, you know, I'm from Missouri, which we call the show me state. And a lot of times it takes a lived experience of something before you can really know what it's like. And this magical tree, I wish I had a name for it because I feel like it deserves a name. So deep in the jungles of Bali, in the heart and the center of Bali is this tree, which is 800, maybe 1,000 years old, and has three trunks, which all come together about 60 feet in the air. And the tree itself is a couple hundred feet tall. And it's just it's a beautiful, fascinating tree from a biology level. But when I visited it for the third time and I touched it, I was instantly sort of given an electric shock. And this was, I think, my first out-of-body experience. It projected my consciousness to a different forest at a different part of the world, which I came to understand was in China. And this forest, which is on the edge of the Gobi Desert, and the desert itself is rapidly expanding there and sort of taking over the forest as a result, ruining things. So the message was, you know, not that this tree was worried for itself, but I am worried about the state of the ecology of the world. And it's because humans are not paying attention. They have separated themselves from nature because you put yourself in boxes and you don't even see the nature that you are. And so it reminded me of, you know, my own spending less time in the wilderness. I spent a lot of time in the woods, camping, growing up. I was just always out in the woods. And, you know, I was neglecting my own connection with nature, but I received a sort of a mission to bring leaders, to bring entrepreneurs, to bring change makers out into the wilderness to reconnect with that aspect of themselves. So I said, you know what? That sounds actually really fun for me. So I'm gonna start a branch of my business, which is, we called it Adventure Quest. And we would mix leadership training with adventure activities and take people into the jungle or caving or rock climbing or whatever it might be. And we would challenge them physically, but also, you know, immerse them right in a wild place so that they could, yeah, let that there, let's call it domestication, wash away for a moment.
One of my favorite books is The Celestine Prophecy. And he talks a lot about plants and the energies that come from plants and to plants, from each other and from us. So I am a firm believer in connecting with nature and things like that, but I've never been electrically shocked. I mean, that sounds terrifying.
It was intense. I mean, I was crying, I was sweating, I was shaking, and I had a very wise woman with me, my girlfriend at the time. She said, you know, you take as long as you need, just sit right here in the heart of the tree and have this experience. And then we can debrief together afterwards. You can process it with me. And I was, you know, it was a gift of her saying that for me.
Was there ayahuasca involved in any way or anything like that? Or is it just straight sober?
Yeah, just, you know, we were out walking in the jungle. Yeah, just normal day.
Wow, that is fascinating. Okay, so then, Karen, any questions about the tree? Because I'll move on otherwise, because I do have a lot of questions, but...
Well, yeah, same, but we don't have a lot of time. Well, maybe we do.
We should have been bending time the other direction, not forward, but backwards, right, for crying out loud. So dream time. You use dream time to improve your life. Does that, to Karen's question earlier on in the show, is that while you're sleeping, while you're dreaming, you create intentions, or how does that work?
Exactly. And the bigger picture is that with so many of these techniques, I want people to find some benefit to them. And I work with a lot of high performing entrepreneurs, athletes, and people that are really pushing the envelope. And so I'm always looking for ways to apply these things. So especially for entrepreneurs, you know, what do they need a lot? Sometimes they need customers. Sometimes they need creativity. Sometimes they need to sort out difficult relationship challenges as a leader. And so a lot of these things can be worked through or accessed through in dream time. And the important part is, again, the intent and setting up your dream time. So let's say I want to find customers. Let's say I want new customers. Either I want my subconscious to tell me exactly who those customers are so that I can just call them up, or I can tell them where to place my marketing efforts so that the right people will find me, so I can go to bed with the intent to receive that type of information. And then when I wake up, I'm also having the intent that I will remember everything, that I will get the information that I need that is in a way that I can understand. And so, you know, the first thing I do when I wake up is I replay my whole dream sequence, everything I can remember. And then I go through my notebook and I underline if there are things that seem to correspond to what I asked for. Because a lot of times people will show up, or you'll be in some random location in your dream and it's not relevant at all. It's just, you know, who knows how it got there. But a lot of times you will get the information you ask for, but it's like a watery reflection of the real world. So you have to be able to parse out the information in some way. And that's where just sort of reviewing your dream notebook and then asking yourself, okay, is there any action that I need to take with this information? You know, I asked, should I sell my business right now? Is this a good time to sell it? Yes or no? And I get a jumble of information. Well, what does that mean to me? Does it make me feel confident that I should sell? Is it not clear? Should I ask again the next night for more clarity? Or so it can be a process, but for entrepreneurs that are trying to be so productive, right? Again, with the whole time thing, there's like never enough time. You get access to a whole 8 more hours of productive time that you can use at night. And so I look forward to going to bed every night because I know that I can get something really valuable from it.
See, now you said something that I never really thought of, and it makes so much sense because I have heard a little bit about setting intentions for your dreams and trying to figure stuff out and process. And I do that and it never works, but it might be because I never set the intent to remember, because I won't remember necessarily what I dreamed. So maybe it did work. Maybe I got that information, but I just don't remember. Mm-hmm. So that I think is key, at least for me. Maybe it will be key. I'll try that.
Yeah, absolutely. And being prepared, right? Knowing that, okay, as soon as I wake up, I'm going to hold on to as much as I can, because they do drift away so quickly in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Now, you are a quantum business coach, right? You do this kind of thing. You help people to tap into the 8 hours that they're sleeping. You help people to really connect with their time-bending abilities. And I mean, so much more. When looking at your website, we probably wouldn't have enough time in 2 hours to go through everything that you're doing. I mean, you've actually gone out and experienced more than 50 different modalities. And we mentioned earlier on that it was healing techniques, but it's a lot more than that. I mean, plant communication, telepathy, all these kinds of things that has nothing to do with healing, but actually you looked into. You sound very similar to what we're doing, where we're throwing ourselves into experiences and trying to figure out how it speaks to us. Has there been one thing that really has smacked you in the head and said, this is the secret to life?
the secret to life. One thing that I always loved as a kid was gems and minerals and crystals, and realizing that they can be useful spiritual tools, that they have their own flavor of how they can help you in many ways, was just a delight for me to experience. I teach people how to use grids or arrays of crystals. Again, like if they're launching a new business offering, how to use crystals in a way that sort of anchor in that field of a future reality, like a successful business launch, a seven-figure income, using crystals to sort of bring that from a less dense ethereal plane into like physical material reality is something that is a lot of fun for me. So yeah, I was happy to find something that I already, that I could use on a sort of spiritual level.
Oh my gosh. I could talk to you forever. You are a multifaceted, super fascinating. I mean, you are an amazing human being. I would urge anyone. I mean, we haven't even talked about your books, right? You've got Activate Your Life. You've got Superconductors. You have so much about you that people that are listening would really get a lot from your podcast by itself. I know I'm actually going to be binge listening some of your episodes because some of the things that you talked about are fascinating to me. But if someone wanted to reach out to you to learn more about you, I assume your website would probably be the best way to do that.
Yeah, DerekLoudermilk.com and Derek Loudermilk on all the social platforms as well.
Well, we're going to add direct links to your website, your social media platforms, your books, all that kind of stuff. So if you want to get in touch with Derek, all you need to do is go to skepticmetaphysician.com, go to his episode page, and you'll have all those direct links there. So it makes it super easy for you to reach out.
Well, Will and Karen, thanks for having me. Great to be here with you guys.
This has been fantastic. Thank you.
And listener, thanks to you for coming along on this journey of discovery. And hey, we'd love it if you would do us a huge favor and help us get the show into the hands of those that we could really benefit from it. So if you know someone that you think would enjoy our conversations, please feel free to share the show with them. Let's show the world that we can be a united front for good. And if you're listening to this on the radio and missed something, not to worry. All of our shows, including this one, can be found on skepticmetaphysician.com, where you can also watch the videos or even send us email or voicemails directly from the site. We absolutely love feedback and would appreciate hearing from you. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this episode as much as we have. That's all for now. We'll see you on the next episode of The Skeptic Metaphysicians. Until then, take care.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.